Heyo, and welcome to Dune Reads Goosebumps. I am Dune, and this is part two of I Live in Your Basement by R.L. Stine on Dune Reads Goosebumps. Since the last episode, my whole house has been gutted. I can't go in my bedroom or any other room, and I have to sleep on the couch. And don't know exactly when they're going to fix things, because everyone's very evasive. So, might have to go stay at my parents' with all three pets. And my fiance, I don't fucking know, but it's just a big clusterfuck. There's dehumidifiers and fans going nonstop, and it's currently like 58 degrees outside and 81 in here, so I'm sweating profusely and pissed off. Fucking ridiculous. All this is ridiculous. I'm annoyed. Anyway, don't want to bum you guys out. I'm just going to give you some goosebumps. I'm drinking a Pacifico. I've been drinking all day, obviously. It's been very frustrating. Chapter number 16. No way! I cried. I turned to the monitor. Black. The screen was black. No face. No words. Gwynny walked across the room and leaned against the window ledge. She crossed her arms in front of her. That was a joke, right? She demanded. I couldn't take my eyes from the screen. Had I imagined the face? No, I saw it there, just like I had seen Goatsy there earlier and had a funny feeling of kind of interest and it should have been horror. I'm not crazy, I told myself, like crazy people always demand. He did it, I told Gwynny, my voice shaking. Keith, his name is Keith. He is playing tricks on me. He's haunting me. Gwynny eyed me suspiciously. Marco, when did you see him for the first time? After I hit you on the head, right? I don't care, I cried. He's here, Gwynny. I saw him. He sat right there, right on my bed. He says he lives in my basement. Gwynny shook her head. Her dark hair tumbled all over her face again. Calm down, Marco. Stop and think about it. I can describe him, I insisted breathlessly. He has black hair, same color as yours, and dark circles around his eyes, kind of like the baseball player dudes from the Warriors, and a real serious expression. Gwynny tisk-tisked. Just think about it, she repeated. Why would he be here? Why would he be in your basement? What are you saying, like dudes in your basement? You know what I'm saying? Wink. He told me I have to take care of him, I replied heatedly. He said I have to take care of him for the rest of my life. Like, you know, someone with a disabled sibling. That wasn't even a joke. That just, like, bummed me out. Life is cruel. Oh, such is life. Gwynny narrowed her eyes at me. She didn't say anything. I could see her studying me, and I could almost read her thoughts. Poor Marco. He totally lost it. But at least Dune doesn't have to say polo each time now, because he put the kibosh on that. An idea flashed into my mind. Gwynny, he's down there, I said softly. Keith is down in the basement. I know he is. She still didn't reply. Come down with me, I asked. Please. She bit her bottom lip. You know what that means when you ask someone to come down with you and they bite their lip? That's 69 and you guys are going down together. Gwynny is a lot braver than I am, I told myself. She's bigger than I am, and she's meaner and stronger, and probably has a flannel shirt on and hiking boots, which, you know, are good for kicking people. Franklin, be nice to Yoda. There's nowhere for him to run. We're fucking living in now a studio apartment. Like I was when I started this podcast. Fucking ashes to ashes. When I started this like 5 or 6 years ago, I lived in one room, but now I'm accustomed to a certain lifestyle that involves having a bedroom and somewhere to sleep. God damn it. Anyway, if we find Keith down in the basement, I'll feel a lot safer if Gwynny is around. This is dumb, she said finally. I should get home. I haven't even started the creative writing assignment. She headed for the door. No, wait, I pleaded, hurrying after her. I'm not crazy, Gwynny. Come down to the basement with me. Sorry, basement. I got a text, so I was distracted, so I couldn't do it. Wonder who the text was from. We'll find out right now. Everyone, who do you think it is? It's Curtis, a co-worker of my fiancé who's with her in Texas right now. What the hell? Huh. Wonder what he says. We'll find out. I'll fill you guys all in. Uh-uh. Please, I begged again. He's down there. We'll find him. I know we will. And then I added, you're not afraid, are you? Of course not, Gwynny snapped. She groaned and tossed up her hands. Okay, okay, let's go down to your basement. Winking emoji. I knew that would get her. I like how everyone in Goosebumps is persuaded to do things by being like, what? You're not a chicken, are you? I need to start using that to sway people's opinions. Like,
oh, you're just going to give me this DUI because you're a chicken. You're not afraid to let me go, are you?
And be like, I'll show you. You can go free, sir. Have a shot on me.
Come on, hurry, Gwynny urged. Show me your little friend.
Your little basement friend, wink.
Then I've got to get home. I led the way to the basement stairs. Then I pulled the door open and shit and clicked on the light. I peered down the wooden stairway. Nothing to see down there. But I felt a chill of fear anyway.
You go first, I told Gwynny. So to fill you in on the big text message cliffhanger, it said, hey, good job being productive. And I responded with, what? Like, just a W-A-T, because I have no idea what he's talking about. Chapter 17!
Our sneakers thudded on the wooden steps. The air grew colder as we made our way down. Mom is always complaining that we have no heat in the basement. She's talking about not having much spark and fire in her bedroom.
Your parents are going to get divorced, and it's probably your fault.
Gwynny led the...
he doesn't have a dad in this one. Forget it. They already got divorced. It's already your fault. That's why she has no heat in the basement. You need to find her a new stepdad, a cool guy that smokes and stuff, and then she'll get some heat in the basement. You know what I'm saying?
Gwynny led the way, moving quickly. My hand gripping the banister, I hurried to stay close to her. At the bottom of the steps, I stopped short to keep from bumping into her. We both glanced around the main room. A ceiling light had gone out. Half the room was hidden in deep shadows. I heard the drip, drip, drip of a faucet coming from the laundry room at the far wall. The sound of heavy breathing made me gasp. Then I realized the sound came from Gwynny. Gwynny took a few steps into the room. Then she cupped her hands around her mouth and shouted, hey, boy, are you down here? I crept up beside her and listened. No reply.
Keith, Chief Keith,
Gwynny shouted.
Keithy Weethy, Keithy Keithy Bo Beethy Banana Fana Fo Feethy, where are you?
Franklin, where are you going?
Hold up. Never mind. I shuddered. He was down here. I knew he was. Why wasn't Gwynny afraid? A sudden sound made me jump. My eyes moved up to the ceiling. Gusts of wind were rattling the basement windows. I stopped to listen to another strange sound.
A mouse? Cheep, 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 cheep.
Apparently mice sound like little birds to me. Forget it. Let's keep going on.
No, just Gwynny's sneakers squeaking over the linoleum floor. We moved deeper into the room. I stepped up to the pool table. I peered underneath. No one under there. Gwynny pulled open the pantry door beneath the stairwell because she was fat and she needed some Rice Krispie treats. She clicked on the light and searched the shelves. God damn it, they don't have any Rice Krispie treats. I'll just have these brown sugar cinnamon Pop-Tarts because those are the best Pop-Tarts, and if someone else thinks there's a better Pop-Tart, they're wrong. She closed the door and turned to me.
I'm starting to feel a little silly, Marco.
He's down here, I insisted, my voice just above a whisper. He says he lives down here. I know he's here.
You know, the guy that appeared with his face in my computer screen is down here. He is, I know he is, it's a fact.
Gwynny sighed. I'll give it a few more minutes, then I'm out of here. Let's search over here, I said, by the furnace. We made our way across the room. The furnace stood in the dark part of the room. It rose up in front of us like some kind of gigantic creature.
Keith, Gwynny called. Keith, where are you hiding? Come out, wherever you are.
Her voice echoed off the dark walls. Outside, the wind howled, rattling the windows.
Hey, wait up, I whispered. I didn't want Gwynny to get too far ahead.
Slow down, you bitch. She pulled open an old clothes cabinet.
I think it's called like a closet. Or a wardrobe.
Keith, are you in here? The smell of mothballs floated out. Gwynny slammed the closet door shut. Keith, don't be shy, Keith, she called. We peered behind the furnace. No one hiding back there. The laundry room is the only room we haven't searched, I told her. I'll bet he's hiding in the dryer, Gwynnie teased. I knew she wasn't taking me seriously, but I didn't give a shit. I was glad to have her down there with me because she was huge and brutish and a half-orc barbarian that was chaotic neutral. I never could have searched the basement on my own. I followed her toward the laundry room against the wall. We were halfway across the floor when she stopped suddenly. Oh, wow, she exclaimed. There he is. I see him.
There's no way that's him. It's just the end of a chapter and someone fucking with someone. I know how Goosebumps works, Arlstein. I think I've read more or spent more time on them than anyone. Dear God, I probably have.
Chapter 18. Huh? My heart leaped. I let out a gasp and spun right round, baby, right now, like a guy that thought his imaginary friend was in the basement. And stared at my mom's old clothing dummy.
What is a clothing dummy? Is that like a mannequin?
Gwynnie laughed. Oops, a little mistake. My whole body was shaking. You're not funny. I managed to choke out, making a commentary on women comedians. I tried to punch her, but she dodged away from me, laughing hard. Marco, give up, she said, shaking her head. I know you're trying to scare me with this phony Keith story, but it just isn't scary enough. I know there's no one down here. But, I sputtered. That line is in every goddamn book. You mean you didn't believe me for 1 second? Of course not, Gwynnie replied. Who would believe a story like that? And you thought I was just trying to pay you back for hitting me on the head? I asked shrilly. She nodded. You want to go to school tomorrow and tell everyone how you scared me, Gwynnie accused. No, you're wrong. Listen to me, I pleaded. No way, she interrupted. She turned and headed toward the stairs. Gwynnie, listen, I begged, chasing after her. She stopped at the bottom of the stairs and turned back to me. You can't scare me, Marco, like the Goosebumps book titled You Can't Scare Me. But I don't remember what that one was about, but I probably didn't enjoy it, but I still did it, and then people complained to me anyway, she said. Her eyes caught the light from the stairwell. A strange smile spread over her face. You can't scare me, she repeated. I'll show you why. Excuse me? I didn't understand. If you'd listen to me, I'll show you something, Gwynnie said. She placed both hands on the wooden banister. Then she opened her mouth wide. Wider. Her mouth stretched open. Wider. Wider. Until the rest of her face disappeared behind her open mouth like that claymation dude in Beetlejuice. Her tongue popped heavy over her chin, and then something pink began to pour out. Something pink and glistening, wet, rolled from the gaping mouth of the face and the eyes and the shit. More. More. Swelling as it poured out. At first, I thought she had a big gob of bubblegum in there. But as the pink gunk flowed up from her throat, the mouth pulled open even further, and her head disappeared behind it. And I realized I wasn't staring at bubblegum. This must be the hymen that they're talking about in a health class. I was about to break her. Oh, wait, no. I was staring at Gwynnie's insides. I saw yellow organs clinging to the glistening pink flesh. Something long and gray twisted out of her mouth. Where'd I get smooth from? Out of her mouth, wrapping around itself. Dark purple lungs slid over the drooping tongue. And then her red heart. So red, so startlingly red, so just into Donald Trump red, plopped from her open mouth, throbbing, throbbing steadily, throbbing wetly. That is some good writing. Oh! I uttered a long moan of horror, but I couldn't turn away, couldn't take my eyes off Gwynnie as her insides poured from her mouth. Oh, that's a major prolapse. Take that, rewind back. Dune got the shit made Gwynnie prolapse. I stood there and stared in amazement and cold horror at the pulsing, quivering organs clinging to the oozing pink flesh. Stood there watching Gwynnie until she had turned completely inside out. And then I opened my mouth in an endless scream. I'm not gonna do that for any longer. That would just be annoying to everyone listening. I refuse. I think I might just keep reading. Go 3 chapters.
Chapter 19. My scream rose like a shrill siren. Oh god, there's nothing worse than the scream of some boy who hasn't gone through puberty. When our nephews were here, the one that's 4, when he would get like frustrated, I think he, not frustrated, because it's not like he's like, I'm so angry, like it's one of those things, he knows it bothers people, so he does it, which is what kids do, and it's kind of what I do. And he would do this scream where little boys go, ah, but it's at the top of their lungs, and it's the worst sound in the world. Anyway, I assume that's what the kid's doing. It's just, it's hell. Every second of it's hell. Gwynny, inside out Gwynny, quivered in front of me, quivered and pulsed. By the way, if I was going to expose myself as an inside out person, I would choose not to do it in a gross, dank, dusty, mildewy basement. That's how your body gets full of gross-ass germs and shit. You gotta do that in, like, a room that's just been cleaned. I'm just saying. You know, if I was to turn myself inside out. Which sometimes I feel like would be a nice thing to do. Just turn myself inside out to hose out all my organs and fix my body. Can science do that? The sound of my scream seemed to make her quiver harder. Quiver like a mound of pink and yellow jello. And as I screamed, a white light flashed around us, so bright I closed my eyes and still saw it. Such a bright, white, blinding white. It doesn't say light there. I thought it would, but it just says white twice in that sentence. I read it right. My scream cut through the whiteness. Gwynny vanished inside it. The basement, and vanished too. I sank into the white, into the shrill wail of my own cry. And when I opened my eyes, I stared up at a white ceiling and a white light. Wait, it really does say white curtains now. That makes me happy. White curtains over a half-open window, revealing gray clouds. I'm white, a dabba dee da da. My dog's white, my cat is white, blue a doo boo. That's the real song. My throat ached. I cut off my scream. I blinked into the new whiteness, and Mom's face floated into view. Marco, are you waking up? She asked softly. Her lipstick was smeared like Robert the Smith. Her eyes were bloodshot like Snoopa the dog. I saw dried tear tracks on her pale cheeks, like the Native American man that doesn't like when you litter. Waking up, I choked out, my voice hoarse and sleep-clogged. You're going to be okay, Mom said, patting my chest under the blanket. I glanced around. I was laying on my back in a bed, in a small room, a hospital room. You had a bad hit on the head, Marco, Mom said. The ambulance rushed you here to the hospital. You've been out for nearly an hour. Huh? I've been out? I whispered. You mean asleep? Mom nodded. But I was down in the basement, I protested. Gwynny and I were searching for the boy. Mom's expression turned fearful. Her chin trembled. Boy? What boy? Keith, I told you, the boy who says he lives in our basement. Marco, you were dreaming, Mom said. It was so frightening, I sighed. From your hit on the head, Mom explained. You were out cold. It must have given you terrible nightmares. You mean I haven't been home? I cried. I haven't been in school? Mom eyed me carefully, studying me. No, you've been this hospital bed ever since you were hit. It's like that season of My Name is Earl where for some reason all the stuff took place in his weird coma brain and it wasn't very good. And you're like, man, this show better get good again. Then it did for like a second, then they canceled it. She shook her head. I warned you, Marco. I told you not to play baseball. I knew something like this would happen. She kept on talking, but I didn't listen. I was thinking hard and feeling so happy. It had all been a dream. Keith living in my basement. Dr. Bailey wanting to remove my brain. Gwynny turning inside out. All a wild, frightening dream. It never happened. None of it. And now it was over. I'd be so mad if that was the end of the book. And I was going to be okay. I felt so great. I wanted to leap up from the bed. I wanted to shout and cheer and jump for joy. But I had a catheter in, and if that was the case, it would rip my pee hole wide open like peeling a banana. But then I gazed over my mom's shoulder to the door. And I saw
Gwynny.
No!
I uttered a horrified cry. Gwynny was real. Gwynny was alive, and she was coming for me, hurrying across the room to get me, an evil gleam in her eyes. Hey, someone listening, pay me a bunch of money to read something, as I do with Dune Reads Goosebumps, so then I could subside on me and my ability to read things. I'm just saying, I could do audiobooks, pay me. Chapter 20. I let out a scream. I struggled to climb up, but the sheet and the blanket were tucked in too tight. Darn, foiled by a blanket. I couldn't move. Mom, stop her, I pleaded. Please don't let her hurt me. Gwynny stepped up to the side of the bed, her eyes glowing. Mom put a hand on Gwynny's shoulder. Marco, what's wrong? She demanded. Why are you afraid of your own sister? Sister? Is this just like a weird hallucination book? I'm into that. No, I protested. She swung the bat. She hit my head and then... I did not, Gwynny whined. I wasn't the one who hit you. Are you crazy? Mom tugged Gwynny back a few steps. Gwynny didn't do it, Marco, Mom said softly. Gwynny wasn't at the playground, don't you remember? That bump on his head really messed up his memory, Gwynny said. She stared hard at me, shaking her head. Do you remember anything, Marco? Of course, I murmured. But I suddenly felt dizzy, as if my brain were spinning inside of my head. I felt so confused. I didn't know what I remembered and what I'd forgotten. How much is 4 and 4? Gwynny demanded. Gwynny, give Marco a break, Mom scolded. She turned back to me. You do remember your little sister, right, Marco? Little sister? Gwynny was twice my size. Yeah, I remember her, I replied. I rolled my eyes. How could I forget her? I guess the horrible dream mixed everything up, I explained. In my dream, she wasn't my sister, and... She swung the bat that... Your friend Jeremy swung the bat, Gwynny declared. Don't you remember anything? Jeremy, I cried, like the kid who spoke in class one day. Oh, God, I'm so glad I'm, like, not of the age where I ever appreciated grunge. You know, like, I'm too young. I say that, but I still love My Chemical Romance, so maybe I'm not the right age. Whatever. It will take Marco a little while, Mom told Gwynny, but Dr. Bailey says he will be perfectly okay. But he'll be stupid, Gwynny insisted. Mom gasped, Gwynny, why did you say that? That's one of those things that you don't want people to defend because you want them to be like, oh, shut up, rather than saying like, why did you say that? Don't tell him that he's stupid and has brain damage now. The point is, clearly has brain damage. Gwynny giggled. Wiggled. Because he was stupid before he got hit on the head. Good save. I let out a growl. I wanted to jump up and punch Gwynny, but the sheet was too tight and I felt too weak. My head throbbed. Pieces of my dream flashed back in my mind. Once again, I saw Gwynny down in the basement, turning inside out. I saw her pink and yellow insides quivering like a pile of jello. And I saw Keith. Sitting on my bed so calm and relaxed, as if the bedroom was his. He's probably going to go home, and then it turns out he has another brother, who's Keith, that lives in the basement. But Keith knows what's up, and he changed reality. That's probably what's going to happen. Mom, I said, trying to force away the strange, confusing pictures. There is no boy named Keith, is there? I mean... I don't know a boy named Keith. He doesn't live in our basement, does he? Of course he does, Gwynny cried. Ah, just like old Drunkle Stiltskin's prediction. Chapter 21. Huh? I stared at her in horror. Gwynny grinned. The basement is filled with people, she exclaimed. Dozens of them. They call themselves the Basement Club. It's pretty much the San Francisco Jacks. They stay down there until we all leave, and then they come upstairs and use our stuff. She laughed, as if she had just made up the funniest joke. Stop teasing your brother and Dune, who thought that was actually real. Mom scolded her. Why are you picking on him, Gwynny? Can't you see he's had a rough time? Sorry, Gwynny said to me, still grinning. Grinny. She's just nervous, Mom explained. She was very worried about you, Marco, really. I settled back on the pillow. The dream, it seemed so real, I murmured. Get some rest, Mom replied tenderly. You need time to get over this. She waved Gwynny to the door. Your sister and I will go out to the waiting room and let you get some sleep. But when can I go home? I demanded. Soon, Mom promised. As soon as Dr. Bailey checks you out. He said if you're okay, you can come right home. Great, I cried. I really wanted to get out of that hospital bed. For one thing, the tight sheets were strangling me, so concerned about not being able to lift some sheets. And I knew I wouldn't have such weird disturbing dreams in my own bed. See you later, Marco. By the way, we're most of the way through this. Not through this episode, but through the entire book, and everything so far was a dream. It's kind of bullshit, right? I don't like that. It's mostly me and my rage for the movie North. Whatever. See you later, Marco, Gwynny called as she stepped out the door. She instantly poked her head back in. One last question. How much is 4 and 4? Gwynny? Mom shoved Gwynny down the hall. 9, I called after them. Gwynny laughed. Hey, you got it right. I stared at the doorway for a long time after they left. Then I stared at the ceiling for a while, counting the white squares. Well, don't leave us hanging. How many white squares are there? My ceiling has 0 white squares. So that's fun, but it's got ugly-ass popcorn. Fuck that noise. My head throbbed, but I started to feel calmer. The room stopped spinning. I shut my eyes, and I guess I fell asleep. The next thing I knew... Oh, God, we're back in dreams. Doo-doo-doo. Oh, whatever. We'll see if it's a dream. I felt someone gently tapping my shoulder. I opened my eyes to find a young doctor in a white lab coat staring down at me. Marco, are you awake? He asked softly. I'm Dr. Bailey. He didn't look anything like the Dr. Bailey in my dream. He had wavy blonde hair and bright blue eyes. He was young and tanned. Total Hunkasaurus Rex. He looked like an actor, a TV doctor, not a doctor in real life. He looked like Dr. Bruce, not Dr. Drew. How are you feeling? He asked, his voice low and whispery. A little dizzy? Do you have a headache?
A little, I replied.
That's normal, he said. Let me check you out, Marco. Bet you're ready to go home.
I'm ready, I declared SpongeBob-esquely.
Well, let's see, Dr. Bailey said, studying my eyes. Your eyes look nice and clear. That's a very good sign. Open your mouth, please. I opened my mouth for the hunky doctor. The doctor reached in with his right hand. He grabbed my tongue and started to pull it. Yoink! Hey! I tried to protest, but I couldn't speak.
Doc got your tongue? Good one, Dune.
His fingers tightened their grip on my tongue, and he pulled harder.
Stop! You're hurting me! What are you doing? Should I say apple? Asshole.
Good stuff. That's what I wanted to shout, but all I could get out was a muffled, huh? Dr. Bailey tugged hard on my tongue. It slid out of my mouth as a long hot dog. I struggled to squirm away, but he held my chest down with one hand while he pulled my tongue with the other. Pulled and pulled. My tongue was a yard long. Close to a meter for our foreign listeners. It drooped down the side of the bed. Dr. Bailey reached deeper into my mouth and pulled out more tongue, more. Yard after yard, my tongue curled on the floor, wet and pink. I tossed my head back and struggled to breathe as the doctor pulled more tongue from my open mouth. More tongue, more. My tongue piled up and piled up like an endless wet snake on the floor beside the bed.
Gross.
Humming to himself, Dr. Bailey continued to pull. It's a dream, I told myself. Another frightening nightmare. A frightmare, if you will. I shut my eyes tight and willed myself to wake up, to lift myself from the dream. Wake up, Marco. Wake up. Wake up. Grab a brush, put a little makeup. But when I opened my eyes, the doctor, still hunched beside me, was still... No, the doctor still punched... I had it right the first time. But when I opened my eyes, the doctor still hunched beside me, pulling out my tongue, pulling and pulling. It wasn't a dream. I really hope the next chapter was like, JK, seriously, though, it was a dream.
Chapter number 22. And then I woke up, motherfucker R.L. Stein, god damn it, and stared at the white squares on the ceiling. I pulled myself onto my elbows. Sweat poured down my forehead. My head throbbed. Dr. Bailey? I choked out. Gone. Blinking away my confusion, I glanced around the room. The white curtains fluttered over the half-open window. A bed against the far wall stood empty. All alone. I was all alone in the hospital room. Ah, great. Just another way that Walking Dead's totally ripped off from Goosebumps. Good stuff. I glanced down at the floor, expecting to see a pink, coiled pile of my tongue. No. The floor was clean. I moved my tongue against my teeth. My normal-sized tongue. I uttered a long, relieved sigh. I'm okay, I thought. And I'm awake. I'm finally awake.
I bet he's not awake. You know, I bet there's going to be more weird nightmares. It's going to be like Rick and Morty when they go from, like, you know, universe to universe. And it's like, oh, it's kind of like life, but it's too weird, you know. But instead of being like Rick and Morty, this isn't going to be good.
Anyway, no more disgusting nightmares. I heard heavy footsteps in the hall. I turned to the door in time to see a giant enter the room. The man smiled at me and rubbed his stubbly black beard. He had to be at least 7 feet tall. He ducked his head as he stepped into the room. He had bushy black hair and thick black eyebrows like Bert and Ernie that looked like caterpillars. Does Ernie have eyebrows? Like Bert, at least. Floating over his eyeglasses, his white lab coat hung loosely over his long body. A stethoscope bobbed against his broad chest as he walked. "Feeling a little better, Marco?" he asked. "I'm Dr. Bailey." "Are you the real Dr. Bailey?" I blurted out, because I've been mistaken before with thinking real Slim Shadys were real, but they're fake Slim Shadys, because they just ain't me. So,
he furrowed his bushy eyebrows. "What do you mean?"
"Well," I started, "the other Dr. Bailey, I mean, the Dr. Bailey in my dream." He sat down on the edge of the bed. The mattress sank under his weight. He studied me with his eyes for a long moment. "Yes, yes, I'm a little troubled by these dreams of yours," he said finally. He placed the end of the stethoscope on my chest and listened for a few seconds. "Heartbeat is completely normal," he reported. He frowned. "Your mother and your sister are down in the hospital cafeteria. They'll be up in a minute. They told me about your dreams," he said quietly. "Your mom said you were a little confused by them and frightened. Were you having dreams of hunky doctors doing things to your mouth? That can be pretty confusing for a young boy." I nodded. "They were scary, and some were pretty rad, but then I felt shame after, and they all seemed so real. The colors were so real, and..." I didn't know what else to say. Dr. Bailey nodded. "I wanted to keep you here one more night, Marco." "I want to. I didn't want to. I guess I did want to in the past, but I do want to currently as well," he said, tucking the stethoscope under his lab coat. "Your x-rays are okay. I couldn't find any skull damage. The skin is bruised, but your head should heal up nicely." "That's great," I interrupted. He nodded again. "Yes, but I'm a little troubled by all these strange dreams you're having." "Like, what, a black president? Come on."
That joke's funny because, you know, 8 years ago.
"So, I have to stay here one more night?" I asked, disappointed. He climbed to his feet. "Standing so close to me, he appeared to be a mile high." "Yes, one more night," he replied, all Daft Punky, scribbling some notes on a clipboard. "I'll check back with you in the morning." "I'm pretty sure you'll be able to leave then." "Thank you, doctor," I said in a tiny voice. I couldn't hide how upset I felt. I really wanted to get out of that hospital. Dr. Bailey turned to the door. "Oh, I almost forgot," he said, shaking his head. He pulled a square envelope from the pocket of his lab coat. "This came for you, Marco. A few minutes ago, while your mom and sister were downstairs, I almost forgot to deliver it." He handed the envelope to me. "Get some rest," he instructed. "I'll do my best to get you out of here in the morning." I thanked him again. I watched him duck his head as he made his way out into the hall. Then I examined the envelope. It said, "For Marco" on the outside.
in handwriting I didn't recognize. I tore the envelope open and pulled out the note. The handwriting was small and very sloppy. I squinted hard at it and God damn, the handwriting was small and very sloppy. I squinted hard at it and read,
Miss Columbia. Topical jokes. Steve Harvey? That wasn't Steve Harvey. I think it's Steve Harvey. God damn. Cedric the Entertainer. Oh God, I'm a horrible person. The point is that that's something that happened in the media recently where he read the wrong thing on a note, but I'm not going to do that. Well, I might. Honestly, chances are I probably will. Let's see. Let's see if I can do better than Steve Harvey.
Dear Marco, please hurry home. It's time for you to start taking care of me. I'm waiting for you in the basement. Keith.
All right, that's it. That settles it. Old Dune should host Family Feud because he can read super well.
Chapter number 23.
A few minutes later, Mom and Gwynny walked into the room. We brought you a T-R-E-A-T, Gwynny announced, but she said the word, but, you know, Dune doesn't want to distract the old Franklin. She handed me a Milky Way bar, my favorite.
No one's favorite chocolate bar is Milky Way. I don't know if I have a favorite chocolate bar. I'm getting old. I don't have a favorite color. I have, like, more important things. I have, like, favorite people. Like my soon-to-be wife.
The nurse said you can eat whatever you want, Mom said. She stepped up to the bed. Was the doctor here? What did he say? He said I can probably go home in the morning, I told her. But Mom, she narrowed her eyes at me. Aren't you going to eat the candy bar? Gwynny asked. Later, I replied sharply. But it's your favorite, Gwynny insisted. I knew what she wanted. She wanted a bite. I ignored her and gazed at my mom. Mom, Dr. Bailey gave me this letter. I don't understand where it came from. It's from that boy Keith, you know, the one in my dream. But that's impossible. How?
Because it's a dream angel. Dream angel.
Is that the real song? Is that the one I'm thinking of?
Whatever. What letter? Mom interrupted. Show it to me, Marco. Let me read it. I reached for the letter. I had set it down on top of the blanket. No. Not there. I fumbled around the bed for it. No.
I can totally relate to this, because as soon as I put the TV on and adjust something to the remote control, I lose it in the covers, and my fiance is like, why do you lose the remote control? And then I'm like, why don't you let me put Velcro on the back of the remote control and then Velcro on the wall, so every time I use it, I just stick it to the wall behind me, and she says, why can't you just keep track of a remote control in the first place and not be some sort of crazy person that needs to Velcro remote control of the wall? And I go, God damn it, fine, I'm just trying to find a way around the issue that I clearly have where I lose remote control every 2 seconds.
I lifted the pillow and peered underneath. I tugged up the sheet and blanket and searched in the bed. That's so weird, I murmured, shaking my head. I had it in my hand. I just set it down a minute ago. And then his fiance is like, what do you mean you set it down a minute ago? How's it on the floor? You're drunk. You're always drunk. Mom and Gwynny exchanged glances. No, really, I protested.
Maybe you should get back into bed. Mom said, I don't think Dr. Bailey wants you walking around yet.
But I've got to find that letter, I insisted.
Your candy bar is melting, Gwynny said. What terrible structural integrity of a chocolate bar that just melts in a hospital room. Hospitals are cold as shit anyway. My house is cold as shit and not 80 degrees in goddamn January because of these fucking dehumidifiers and fans.
I don't care about the stupid candy bar. I screamed like an Auntie Wonka. I got a letter from that boy who says he lives in our basement, and I want to prove it to you.
Stop screaming, Marco, Mom scolded. You're not thinking clearly. You need to rest.
But, I sputtered. I need to drink every time it says but, I sputtered in books. Oh, but I'm out of beer. I'll get another one after this chapter.
I turned to the door as Dr. Bailey poked his head in. There you are, he smiled. Marco, are you out of bed already? Feeling stronger, huh?
Dr. Bailey, tell them, I cried. You just brought me a letter, right? Tell them about the letter you brought me.
Dr. Bailey's heavy black eyebrows rose up to his forehead.
Letter? He asked. What letter?
Chapter 24.
That night, I tried not to fall asleep. I didn't want any more nightmares. I didn't want to see that boy Keith again. And I didn't want to see my sister or anyone else opening their mouth and turning inside out. I kept my eyes wide open and stared at the gray sky out the window and listened to the sounds of the hospital outside my room. Now I'm drinking Budweiser because I'm American. But I fell asleep anyway, and I slept hard without a single dream. When I awoke the next morning,
this probably is the single dream, huh?
Mom and Gwynny were already in my room. Mom was packing my bag. I groaned and pulled myself up on one elbow. "Wake up, Sleeping Beauty," Mom said cheerfully. "Dr. Bailey says you can go home this morning." "Great," I cried, my voice still hoarse from sleep. My head ached. My hand shot up to the bandage on the side of my head.
Is this really just a book about a child with brain damage? Because that's kind of a bummer.
"Don't touch it," Mom warned like MC Hammer. "Your head will hurt for a while, but you're okay." I lowered my legs to the floor. I felt a little dizzy, but I stood up. "Dr. Bailey says you can go back to school as soon as you feel strong enough," Mom said.
"I'd never go back to school. I'd just sit home all day and watch Muppet Babies and play Super Nintendo."
I don't know what that was weird references to. I remember being sick when I was a kid and Muppet Babies being on TV, but then I never owned a Super Nintendo, so... That was like, whatever. Free association, it gets weird, you know?
"You're so lucky," Gwynny exclaimed. "You missed all the tests and a really bad news assembly with bagpipe players. Get dressed," Mom instructed. She didn't have to tell me twice. I practically dove into my clothes. I was so happy to be going home. I wanted to sing. I wanted to dance.
If you could see me right now, you guys would be so impressed.
Dancing Dune. I even hugged Gwynny for the first time in my life. "I'm sorry I dreamed you weren't my sister," I told her. "Yuck, don't hug me again," Gwynny replied, making a face. "You're scaring me, Marco. You'd better start acting normal." "Don't worry," I told her. "I'll be normal as soon as we get home. I'll be as normal as a person can be." And I meant it. When we arrived home, I kissed the front door.
That's not normal. Deep, deep, deep.
I was so happy. I'd only been away for 2 days, but it seemed like 2 years. Mom got to work in the kitchen making a homemade pizza. My favorite food.
Everyone's favorite food's pizza. That's why we can't eat it, because it's shit.
Mom puts lots of cheese on her pizza and slices of hot dogs instead of pepperoni because we're white trash. She usually makes a pizza only on weekends, but today was a special day, a day to celebrate. Jeremy came over that afternoon. He apologized for hitting me in the head with a bat. I told him I didn't even remember how it happened.
"I'm not sure, either," Jeremy replied.
"You were standing behind me. I didn't see you there at all. It was my turn at bat, and I took a practice swing and bam! Right in your fucking face, you idiot.
Like that new Harley Quinn and that new fucking Suicide Squad movie that people are really excited about, but it's probably going to be disappointing, like all movies are."
I struggled to remember, but it didn't come back to me. "I'm really sorry, Marco." Jeremy apologized again.
Must be Canadian.
"It wasn't your fault," I told him. "Don't blame yourself." "Maybe you knocked some sense into him," Gwynny replied from the den door. "Get out of here, Gwynny," I shouted. "What are you doing out there in the hall? Spying on us?"
"Why would I spy on you?" she shot back.
"You're too boring." I think Gwynny has a crush on Jeremy. She's always showing off when he comes over. "Mom rented some movies. We're going to watch one now," I called to her. "Are you going to watch it with us?"
"Bore-dash-ring," she replied.
But she plopped down on the arm of the couch anyway. She crossed her arms in front of her chest to highlight her breasts to Jeremy.
"What movie?"
I pulled out an Indiana Jones movie I'd seen about 10 times. "This one's cool," I said. "Let's watch it again."
Oh god, it's had the cringiest memory of being a kid and being homesick. I was like 13. And my mom was like going to Blockbuster anyway, because they existed. and I was like, she's like, "Do you want me to get you a movie?" And I was like, "Yeah, get me Rocky." And she's like, "Okay." And for some reason, I meant Rocky Horror Picture Show and abbreviated it, but she got me, like, the Sylvester Stallone classic, which is super manly movie versus super gay movie that I wanted. But I was like, what? No. And I was so disappointed. I don't even think I watched Rocky. I think I just sat there having fever dreams. Mom, anyway, point is that it's very embarrassing. I feel bad for my parents. I gotta go call them and apologize. Mom usually doesn't let us watch movies in the middle of the afternoon. She says it's bad for our eyes. But today was a special day. Homemade pizza in an Indiana Jones movie. It doesn't get much better than that, right? The three of us sat in the den, eating slice after slice and watching the movie. Mom kept interrupting every few minutes to ask how I felt. Each time, I told her, fine. But near the end of the movie, my head started to ache. I felt tired and a little shaky. I decided I'd better take a nap. I said goodbye to Jeremy and told him I'd call him later to go over our homework like a little bitch. Then I went up to my room. With a weary sigh, I sat down on the bed and pulled off my sneakers. Then I tugged down the covers. I started to climb into bed, but I suddenly had the strange feeling I was being watched. I turned away from the bed and saw a boy leaning in the doorway. Jeremy? I called out. No. As he stepped into the room, I recognized him. It was Keith, you idiots. It's Keith. Duh. It's fucking Keith. Chapter 25. I blinked once. Twice. Did he blink a third time? Doesn't say, but we'll assume. Trying to make him disappear. But he crossed the room steadily. Slowly. His dark eyes locked on me. No way! I cried, jumping to my feet. You can't be here. I dreamed you. I know. He replied calmly. I dreamed you, I shouted, and I'm awake now. I know I'm awake. I pinched my arm. I scratched my cheek. Ow! It hurt. I was awake, definitely awake, not dreaming. You can't be here, Keith, I repeated, my knees shaking, my whole body trembling. No way you can be here. I'm awake now, and you don't exist. Keith stopped a few feet in front of me. Keith feet. They're like cool feet, because they belong to Keith. Sure I do, he replied. A smile spread over his solemn face. His dark eyes flashed. I live in your basement, Marco. You know that. I told you that before. But I sputtered. Fucking A. You are not real. You were only in my dreams, like the Weezer song. Still smiling, Keith shook his head. I'm real. Touch me. He held out his ding-dong, just kidding, his arm. I hesitated. Then I reached out slowly, slowly, and squeezed his hand. Hey! I jumped back. He was real. He laughed. I told you. But in my dreams, I started, I used your dreams, Keith explained. I communicated with you in your dreams. I put myself in your dreams. Why? I stammered. His smile faded. I wanted you to know that I was here, waiting for you. I didn't like the cruel expression on his face. I didn't like the way he was talking. He was frightening me. He was trying to frighten me. Boo! Did I frighten you, listeners? Probably not. I suddenly realized. My heart thudded in my chest. The side of my head began to throb. I took a step back. My legs hit the edge of my mattress, and I tumbled onto my back on the bed. Take me, Keith. Just kidding, it doesn't say that. Old Dune. Keith quickly stepped up in front of me, blocking my way, keeping me from climbing to my feet. I've been waiting for you, Marco, he repeated, his eyes hard and cold, because you're going to take care of me for the rest of your life. No! I shouted. I squirmed to the side and tried to jump up, but he was too fast for me. He moved quickly to block me. I stared up at him in fright. No, no way, I repeated shrilly. You're going to do whatever I say, Marco, because I am a dom, Keith insisted. He leaned over me in a threatening way. Go away. You don't belong here. You're frightening me. I refuse to give consent, I blurted out. Get used to it, he hissed. He leaned closer, so close his face was nearly touching mine. Get used to it, Marco, he said through clenched teeth. You have no choice.
I'm here. I'm real. I live in your basement. You have to take care of me now. You have to take care of everything I need. Wink. No, I let out a horrified howl and spun around and spun out from under him. I dropped to the floor on my knees. Then I scrambled past him and jumped to my feet. I saw the knees joke after I was making all like the BDSM jokes and him being dom and blah, blah, blah. And I didn't make a joke about him being on his knees, and I'm proud of myself, but now I'm back to being ashamed because I went right back to explaining the joke. He whirled around, and I saw the anger in his dark eyes. He uttered a fierce growl. "Where are you going, Marco?" he demanded. He didn't wait for an answer. He pounced, like an attack animal. I dodged away from him. Then I staggered backwards to my desk. If only I could get the bedroom door. If only I was able to get to the bedroom door. But he hunkered in the middle of the room now, panting like a wild creature, his eyes blazing, blocking my path. With another low growl, he started toward me again. I searched the room, searched for a way to escape, searched for a weapon, something to keep him away. That's what you get for not having badass katanas all over your house like I do that I got a swap meet. Is this the coolest thing you can have? I'd like to make it clear that I don't have swap meet swords in my house. You can't get away from me, Marco, he cried. You're going to take care of me forever. He dove for me again. I leaned back against the desk, my hand tightened around a paperweight, a big, heavy stone owl that Gwynny had given me for my last birthday. I'm like getting lightheaded. I need to take a break after this. As Keith leaped, I swept.
All right, give me a second. Let me have some beer.
As Keith leaped, I swung my fist with the owl paperweight and slammed Keith in the head with it. His dark eyes bulged in shock. His mouth dropped open, but no sound came out. He slumped to the floor, collapsed in a heap, and didn't move. Keith, I called down in a tiny, quivery voice. Keith? He didn't move. His eyes stared blankly up at the ceiling. Keith! I let the heavy stone owl drop to the floor, and then I crouched down beside the still body. Keith? Keith? Oh no, I moaned. What have I done?
Oh shit, is this like a Black Mirror thing where he keeps replaying in his mind what happened when he assaulted the person and killed him, and he just has to live that moment again and again, knowing that he's responsible for the death? Or I don't know. Who knows? We'll find out, aren't we? Is there something? Who knows?
It's a really cool time to be alive. Chapter 26. Keith? I shook his shoulders. His head bounced on the carpet. His eyes stared up at me. Glassily. They didn't blink. No! I let out another terrified moan and jumped to my feet. The room spun around me. The floor tilted and bobbed. My head throbbed. I stumbled to the door. I planned to call Mom for help, but I turned back before I reached the doorway and saw Keith start to change.
Puberty comes on quick.
Huh? I uttered a gasp and stared down at him in shock and horror. His features, his eyes, his nose, his mouth, his supple pouty lips on his mouth melted into the flesh of his face, and then his head slid into his neck like a turtle pulling into its shell. Keith's head disappeared into his shoulders like the Koopa Troopers in that Mario movie that was terrible. His arms and legs slid into the trunk of his body. His clothes fell away. The skin on his body glimmered and turned milky like the skin of a snail or a slug. As I gaped in shock, the body began to wriggle across the carpet. It flopped wetly, heading toward me. I gasped as I saw the thick trail of yellow slime it left on the carpet behind, and then, before I could force my trembling legs to move, the spongy, wet creature rose up, stretched, and wrapped itself around my waist. I let out a sick groan of disgust. Its sour aroma shot up to my nostrils, choking me. It's sticky, wet flesh tightened around me. I opened my mouth to scream for help, but it choked off my air. The odor, so foul and heavy, like your mother. Wave after wave of it crashing over me like some kind of poison gas. I tried to kick the creature, but my sneaker sank into the soft, gooey slime. I punched with both fists and tried butting it with my head. My punches made wet squish-squish sounds as my hands disappeared into the spongy body. It was like battling a slimy, sticky sponge. I tried to wrestle it, bending it back, but the foul-smelling goo stretched over me, over my face, so warm and sticky, pulsating. It wrapped around my head, covered my face, covered my nose. The warm, sticky slime slid up my nostrils. I can't breathe, I realized. I am going to suffocate inside this thing. Chapter 27. I knew I didn't have much time to free myself. With a burst of strength, I swung my head back, but the warm goo moved with me, pressed tighter against my face. I could feel the sticky slime climbing up my nose, into my mouth.
Like when those people put a snake up their nose and in their mouth, and they're like, look at me, because my dad never did.
I had to get help, but how? I stumbled forward. Could I walk? Could I push the heaving, spongy creature with me? If I could get downstairs, my heart pounding, I forced myself forward, butting against the heavy blob, pushing, digging my knees into its flesh as I struggled to move. Yes, I took a step, then another. Soon enough, I would be calling people and apologizing for things that they didn't want to talk about and was very uncomfortable to bring up. Was I through the bedroom door? I stared through the creature's milky flesh, stared right through its thick body. The house was a shadowy blur on the other side. I couldn't breathe. My chest began to burn. Burn? I couldn't hold my breath much longer. I had to keep going. Pushing, butting it, forcing my legs to take another step. I made my way down the hall with the creature over me.
That's how I feel like when I'm around little kids. Like when you're in the pool with kids and you're like, I don't want you to climb on me. Stop climbing me. Take one step. One more step. Will your parents see them and yell at me or yell at the kids? Not me. What am I talking about? You know when you're in the pool and the kids are climbing on you and you're like, stop. And they don't. I don't know what I'm talking about. Forget it.
Yes, yes. Every step taking me closer to help. Yes. And then suddenly my feet lifted off the floor. I believe I can fly.
Oh, no. I just tumbled forward, falling. I was falling down the stairs.
The sticky creature bounced beneath me, cushioning me like a foam rubber pillow. Down, all the way down the stairs. We bounced hard together at the bottom. My head jerked free from the sticky goo. I gasped in a mouthful of air, so cool and sweet. My lungs about to explode with the delicious menthol flavor. Newports.
That's our new sponsor. Apparently, because young people listen to this podcast. They want me to sell cigarettes.
Just kidding. Don't smoke cigarettes. Just vape, dog. I sucked in another long breath, and then the slime covered my face again. I tried to roll free. I want to roll free, but it stuck to the front of my body, wrapping itself tightly around me again. I kicked off from the wall, bounced forward, through the hall, and into the kitchen. Mom, where are you? My desperate question. Mom, are you home? Don't you hear me? The creature clung to my face, to my chest. Its foul odor swept over me. A wave of dizziness made me slump to my knees. No! I forced myself up, carrying the weight of the spongy, wet creature across the kitchen, peering through its glassy body. Up to the kitchen counter. I slammed it into the sharp counter edge. I backed up and pushed forward again as hard as I could. Slam! You know, come on and slam. It's Space Jam, baby! I dove the slimy creature into the edge of the counter again and again, pushing with all my strength. Then backing up and shooting forward again. Slam, slam! Its body made a sharp, squishy sound with each blow, but it clung on to me tightly, clung to my face, shutting off my air, clung to me until I could feel my strength fade away. One more try. One more slam into the counter. I shot forward as hard as I could. I heard a loud splat. And, to my shock, the spongy, warm goo fell off my face. Dropped from my chest, dropped to the floor with a heavy plop. Gasping, sucking in air, panting so hard my chest ached, I stared down and saw two of the milky slime creatures. I had cut it in two. The two halves throbbed wetly on the kitchen linoleum. They bobbed helplessly like fat insects on their back. Mom, I choked out in only a whisper. Mom! No sound. I couldn't force a sound. I was silent but deadly. I reached my fingers into my throat and pulled out a chunk of slimy goo. Gagging, I heaved it into the sink. Mom! Where was she? I heard a voice from somewhere in the house. From the den? Mom? Was she talking on the phone? Couldn't she hear me battering the slime creature against the counter? Couldn't she hear me calling her? Mom! I staggered toward the door, but I only took a step. Before I couldn't move further, I felt something tighten around the leg of my jeans. Oh! I lowered my gaze and saw both halves of the spongy slime creature wrapping around me. I kicked out one leg, then the other, but they clung on, tightly, like Klingons, and stretched. Two of them now, spreading their sticky, warm bodies up my jeans, up the front of my shirt. I grabbed at them with both hands and pulled, but my hands slid off their shimmering, wet flesh. Mom, Gwynny, somebody help! They swept over my face, two of them now, a delicious threesome, so heavy, I fell to my knees, then sank onto my back. So heavy, the two of them were weighing me down. As I thrashed and slashed at them, squirming and kicking, they melted back into one. Like that brawl from Terminator that like turned into like that liquid ass metal and then he like went back together and then Arnold Schwarzenegger and spread around me, pressing me inside until I was trapped inside. No air left. No air. If only Terry Gross could come and deliver some fresh air. And then, staring helplessly through the thick slime, I saw something move across the kitchen. Probably a raccoon. Someone moving quickly. A blur of color. Mom? Was she in time? Was she in time? Oh, was she like in time to save him? Sorry, that was a weird sentence. Could she pull me out of this disgusting creature? I gazed up at her from inside the thick milky body. Hurry, Mom, I can't breathe. Don't you see me here trapped inside this goo? Hurry! Staring hard at the blur of color, I saw her run up to the creature. Saw her stare down. Hands raised to the side of her face. Pull me out, Mom, I urged silently. Pull me out now, I pleaded, but no. She just stood there and watched as my last bit of breath escaped my lungs. Seriously, kids, don't smoke. That's my advice. But drink heavily, just constantly. Chapter 28. Get up, Marco, Mom ordered. She lowered her hands and pressed them against her waist. Get up, Marco, she repeated sternly. What are you doing on the floor? Huh? I gasped. Mom, I'm trapped inside this thing. I can't breathe. She stared down at me, frowning and shaking her head. Marco, this really isn't the time for dumb games. Will you please get up off the floor? Games? Don't you see? I cried. Keith's head disappeared, and he turned into a big hunk of slime. I tried to get away, but he swallowed me, and... She turned away from me and walked to the sink. I heard the water start to run. Mom? I'm starting to worry about you, Marco, Mom said in a low, steady voice. You're not making any sense. Now, get up. I don't want you rolling on the floor like a baby. Goosebumps, Dune Reads podcast. That's what you listen to. I sat up and gazed around. Hey! I let out a startled cry. No slime creature.
I rubbed the floor with both hands. The floor was perfectly dry, except for the small area in which I did a little tinkle-tinkle, but aside from that, dry. I'm having another dream, I told myself. The glob of slime wasn't real. Our wrestling match down the stairs didn't happen. The whole thing was another disgusting dream. I'm not sitting on the floor in the kitchen anymore. I'm asleep in my bed, dreaming this. And now I'm going to wake up and end it. Wake up. Wake up, Marco, I ordered myself. I should, at the end of this, do like a wake up and then do like 500 of the most common names. And then you could use it as your alarm in the morning. It'd be like, wake up, Gio. Wake up, Caesar. Wake up, Dan. Wake up, Franklin. No, I'm kidding. You can keep sleeping, Papa. I love you. I climbed to my feet. Mom was at the sink, drinking a tall glass of water. Wink. Wake up, Marco. If this was a dream, why couldn't I escape from it? I turned and slammed my forehead into a cabinet. Ow! The pain exploded in my head, shot down my neck, my back, his lady bits, and his crack. I'm not dreaming, I murmured out loud. Mom turned from the sink. What did you say? I'm not dreaming, I repeated, feeling dazed. At least you are standing up, Mom replied. She studied me. Does your head hurt, Marco? Yeah, it hurt because I slammed it into a fucking cabinet. But I said, no, I'm fine, Mom. But then I ran out of the kitchen. I had to get out of there. I had to think. I had to be alone and figure this out. Marco, Mom called after me, but I didn't turn back. I ran up the stairs and into my room, and I slammed the bedroom door behind me. Marco, take it easy. I gasped and raised my eyes to the bed. Keith sat cross-legged on the blanket, the pillow between his hands. Sit down, he said, motioning to my desk chair. Take a deep breath. Relax. We're going to spend a long time together. The rest of your life. Chapter 29. We're just gonna keep rolling on and get this goosebumps up. Am I dreaming? I asked in a tiny voice. Keith didn't reply. He pointed to the chair. Sit down, he ordered, as if Dune was trying to give Franklin some treats, but he wouldn't sit, and he was just doing that thing where he just kind of hovers his butt above the ground, but he doesn't actually sit. I glanced at the door. I thought about escaping, but I suddenly felt so tired, so totally weak and weary. My legs started to give way, and my whole body done trembled. I'm so tired, I moaned. I turned back to Keith. You win, I murmured. You've beaten me. He smiled and pointed again to the chair. I slumped into it with a long sigh. I can't fight you, I told him wearily. I don't know if I'm dreaming or awake, and I don't have the strength to find out. His smile grew wider, a victory smile, I guess. His dark eyes flashed. You win, I repeated sadly. I'll do whatever you want. Wink. He jumped to his feet and crossed the room. Then he patted me on the shoulder as if I were his puppy dog. Smart boy, he said. Franklin, you're a smart boy, Papa. I love you so much. I know it's been a long day and we haven't gone to bed for days and it's been frustrating, but I love you. Whatever. He stood in front of me and crossed his arms. His grin was frozen on his face. I knew you'd see it my way, he said, because you're a very smart boy, Marco. I lowered my head. I couldn't stand seeing that sick grin on his face. I know you will take very good care of me. Keith continued, I know you will do whatever I tell you to for as long as you live. He suddenly spun away and started to the door. Where are you going? I demanded weakly. I'm going down to the basement, he replied. Where I live, okay? That's where I play World of Warcraft for like 16 hours a day. You have to take care of me by wiping Cheeto dust off my fingers so it doesn't ruin the keyboard and occasionally taking away my piss jugs. And do you know what I'm going to do? No, I choked out. Guess, he demanded. I can't guess, I snapped. Give me a break. I'm going down to the basement.
down to the basement. And that's weird writing. It says, I'm going down to the basement and make a list of all the things you can do for me right away. It should say, I'm going down to the basement to make a list. Or, and going to, whatever. Nice job, RL. That was an old Dune. Keith said, you wait here, Marco. When I finish my list, I will come back and we can go over it together. Right, I muttered under my breath. I rolled my eyes. Was he serious about this? Did he really expect me to be his slave forever? He stopped at the door and turned back to me. Before I go, there's just one thing I want to show you, he said. Wink again. He took a few steps back into the room. Then he opened his mouth wide. Shiny, pink stuff poured out of his mouth. For a second, I thought he was blowing a bubble gum bubble. Or maybe it was his hymen. But I quickly realized what was happening. His glistening, wet insides poured out of his mouth. Yellow organs clung to the pink flesh. His purple heart plopped out from between his teeth, pulsing inside a thick web of blue, rope-like veins. I stared in horror, watching him turn inside out. Then I started to scream, and Keith opened his mouth, teeth on the outside, and he screamed too. That's like the creepiest description in all of Goosebumps ever.
Chapter number 30.
I opened my eyes and blinked. My eyes were dry and caked. My mouth felt as dry as cotton. I think I was heck of 420'd. I got blazed, dog. Also, that's the other thing you guys shouldn't smoke. No cigarettes, no weed. Just don't smoke. That's cool. I must have been sleeping a long time, I told myself, still lying flat. I stretched my arms out. The muscles ached. My head ached. With a groan, I lifted my head off the pillow. Then I raised myself up onto both elbows.
Whoa,
I murmured in a Keanu-esque tone. The basement slowly came into focus. I felt so dizzy, dizzy and weak. Keith, you're awake. I heard Mom's voice. And then she popped into view. I opened my mouth to greet her, but only coughed. I cleared my throat like I had previously cleared the carve, you know what I'm saying, the bong loads. You're finally awake, Keith, Mom said. I've been waiting for so long. What did I tell you about dabs? I shook my head hard, trying to shake away my confusion. I glanced around, struggling to focus my eyes. Yes, here I was. Safe and sound in the basement where Mom and I live. But what happened to me? Why had I been asleep for so long? Strange pictures floated through my mind. Mom, I choked out. Mom, I had such terrible nightmares. She tenderly brushed my hair off my forehead. Her hand felt warm and smooth. What did you dream? She asked softly. I dreamed that Marco was hit in the head with a baseball bat, I stammered. Mom bit her bottom lip. You dreamed about Marco? She asked, staring hard at me. I nodded. Yes, Marco was hit by a bat and I... But you were hit by a bat, Keith, Mom interrupted. Not Marco. Everything was turned around in the dream, I told Mom. I dreamed that I went up to Marco's room and I told him who I was and that I live in his basement. Mom sat down. Did we change perspectives? Obviously, we're not supposed to know, but are we now the monsters that live in the basement, like the family of them? Anyway, Mom sat down on the edge of my cot. Then what happened? She asked. He started fighting me, I told her. Marco was horrible to me. He started wrestling me, and he pulled me down the stairs. I was so frightened. Mom narrowed her eyes at me. Keith, I warned you, didn't I? I warned you never to play with humans. Okay, so that's... yeah, all right. Yes, but... I started. She raised a hand to silence me. Never play with humans, Keith, Mom scolded. You're a monster. You should never forget it, she sighed. Just because you look exactly like a human doesn't mean you can be friends with humans. I'm going to tell my kids that. Look, sorry, you look just like them. I understand that, but you're a monster, you know?
I know,
I grumbled. How many times had I heard this boring lecture before? At least 100 times. I warned you never to play ball with Marco and the other humans, Mom continued. But you didn't listen to me, and look what happened. I raised my hand and felt the bandage on the side of my head. You were hit in the head with a bat, Keith, Mom said, her voice trembling. You were badly hurt. It's no wonder you had terrible nightmares. Mom, please. I tried to sit up, but she gently forced me back onto my back. You can't go up and play with the humans, she continued her lecture. Once Mom starts, it's impossible to get her to stop. We have to be so careful, Keith. So careful.
I'm out of Budweiser.
I know, I cried. I know the whole lecture, Mom. We're monsters, and we live in Marco and Gwynny's basement. And if they ever find out we're down here, they'll get frightened and chase us away. Mom frowned at me. I know it's tempting to go up there and play with him, she said, but I hope you've learned your lesson. You had me so worried this time, Keith. I'm sorry, Mom. I'll be careful from now on, I promised. That seemed to make her happy. She smiled at me. Okay, she said. You need your rest. Turn inside out and get some sleep. Okay, I agreed. I said goodnight to her and watched her disappear to the other side of the basement. Then I opened my mouth and began to turn inside out. It felt so good to let my insides pour out, so clean and refreshing. I think he just described bulimia. My heart and arteries slid from between my teeth. My stomach was halfway out of my mouth when I heard a sound. No, a sound on the basement stairs. I glanced up and saw Marco standing there. Did he see me? I just went through and checked the entire list of Goosebumps books, and I was seeing how many I had left of the original 62, and I seriously think I only have like 4 left. Like, I could legitimately finish this before I turn 30 in July, because once I'm 30, this is going to be a silly hobby. It won't be good. So, yeah. I might be able to do that soon. Then I don't know what, you know? Someone got to give me some money. Chapter 31. Staring hard at the figure on the basement stairs, I quickly sucked up my insides. My heart and veins slid back into my body. Then I swallowed my lungs. Did Marco see me? Yes. His eyes bulged with shock. His mouth hung open. A wave of panic swept over me. A chill ran down my back. This is our worst nightmare, I thought. I've been caught. I've been seen by a human. Now what? I stared back at Marco and waited for him to speak. It took him a long time. He gripped the banister and held onto it tightly. He squinted across the gray basement at me, squinted hard as if he didn't believe what he was seeing. Who are you? He asked finally in a small, frightened voice. I swallowed hard. What should I say? How should I answer? I had to think fast. Who are you? He repeated, a little louder, a little stronger. You're dreaming? I called up to him. He squinted harder at me. Go back upstairs, I told him. It's just a dream. Would he believe me? The end. I know I keep complaining the further that we get along about each book when I finish them, but that really may be my least favorite Goosebumps book. It was just a clusterfuck. It was just like, here's this story, and that doesn't do anything, and it was a dream. And here's this one's a dream, and here's this one's a dream, and it turns out I'm a monster, and I'm the one dreaming. But it's like, we've done that before, right? We've done that before numerous times where it turns out that we're the monster, or we're the aliens, or this isn't Earth, or we're a ghost. I don't know. I'm Dune. This is Dune Reads Goosebumps. Keep in contact with me. It does keep me motivated to do things. And until then, stay spooky, bitches.